The Beatles, Sun King. I figured, well, the sun's coming up for some of the listeners in various time zones. I'll tell you, in all the history of popular music, there's nothing quite like the second side of that Abbey Road album, where one song after another sort of morphs seamlessly into the next. Lush harmonies. That's a great song and a great album. We're talking with John Climo and Mary Rodwell about the organization FREE, Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. We'll hear a little bit about their study and what they're trying to accomplish, and then open up the phone lines. You're welcome to ask anything you want or make any comment. I hope you go beyond just saying you saw a UFO somewhere. Give them your good stuff. Show them what we're all about here on Coast to Coast. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You know, there's so much that we don't know. I can imagine it was so challenging for Free to come up with some sort of an instrument, I guess you'd call it, to launch this study. You know, these visitors, if they're visitors, maybe they live here, maybe we're the visitors. We know that they appear to us in different shapes and different sizes. They can disguise what they look like. They can assume other shapes. They morph into different things. We don't really know what they look like, or where they're from, or what their agenda is. I suspect that maybe, in hearing from the two of you tonight, that it's multiple intelligences out there, maybe with multiple agendas. Well, not all of them friendly. But I guess the ultimate answer, or the ultimate happy ending in this, is that we would at least be able to ask the right questions. John, you are intricately involved with designing the, I'm using air quotes around it, the instrument, the study, a questionnaire. Tell me, what is the happy ending? What? Hello? What would be the happy ending, the result that you'd like to get from what you've undertaken?
Well, we'd like to be able to turn from our own study and from the participants in our own study and the data derived from them, turn to the larger population and say, including the privileged part of it, the higher education, the scientific community, the power structure that turns out degrees and empowers people to be taken seriously and be authorities. And right now, you know, most of the people who listen to this program and are on it are outsiders. They're disenfranchised from that. So one thing we hope to do by this study, and others like it, is to show how many we got, you know, something like 1,300 people in the first phase we've worked with already. That gets to be a significant N, and they say in research circles, the number of people that your data is based on. And if we get enough people and we ask them the same questions, at least in the first phases of what we're doing, the quantitative component, and I'll get to that in a second, you can then generalize. You can make the pieces of the wedges in the pie and show this many percentage and this many percentage and this many percentage of the overall 1,300, and it may end up being 13,000. Your own listeners may become involved. And it increases it in effectiveness, making a case for. And that is that how do you keep dismissing thousands and hundreds and thousands and maybe eventually a lot more than that? It could really in our you know our Facebook times and all that, we could exponentially grow this thing till finally all the people are trying to keep a lid on this stuff and keep control over it. The control freaks and the people that want to keep a certain power in the mystification of it, and not letting the larger population know the truth of things, including the truth of themselves and their own potential, let alone the truth of the cover-up stuff about the ufology. That if you could see in studies like this that we're working on, that my God, there's thousands of people. You know, we certainly got many, many hundreds now, but it could move to thousands if we open it up to your own listeners, for example. They can't all be crazy, and they can look at they hold day jobs and they have families and they're nice people. They're not crazy. Remember, Mary is a clinician, and I'm an academic, a research psychologist that trains clinical psychologists, for God's sakes, and I empower them that they become doctors and get PhDs in this stuff. You know, we know what we're talking about, and nobody's gonna be able to disempower me by saying I'm a nutcase. dealing with nutcases. That's such an absurd, simplistic way to handle it. So,
John, do you think in the end that it's most people have experiences, whether they know it or not, that most of us or even all of us?
Most people have had anomalous and paranormal experiences of various shapes, sizes, and degrees. Whether it is what we would call extraterrestrial or just otherworldly, that's a smaller percentage in that case. Although if you wanted to really hypnotize people or really lie them down on the old couch and get them relaxed and talk about this more and get them put quality of attention focused on it, you might find a surprisingly larger percentage. But the purpose of this instrument, we're calling it here, multi-phase instrument, is to finally have some hard data with a large enough N, a large enough number of participants, that we can say, begin to generalize that this percentage of the population of people claiming or saying, yes, I've had that kind of experience, are saying they're little grays, or they're reptilian, or they're angelic, or it was positive, or it was negative, or they gave me scientific information, and if you ask me more questions, I'll tell you what kind of information. We just want to manage this stuff and grow it like agriculture. We want to grow the data till it's like they said in the Godfather. It's something you can't refuse anymore. And it finally elbows out of the way the fellow human beings that are trying to keep control and a lid on things, and they think it's for our own good and all that stuff. But I think it's not evil; it's a form of evil. But one way to come back at it is with data and evidence and science. And right now we're looking at just being able to mass enough people together where they say, like a Greek chorus, "I've had this kind of experience." And after a while, you can't say, well, geez, they must all be delusional. They must all be hallucinating. It's all just wishful thinking or fantasy proneness. Some of it could be. It's true for all of us. But by God, there is something happening. The elephant is in the room, boys and girls. And then other people come forth. They have the courage to come forth and say, I heard your show or this and that and that. And I've now been given an opportunity to take that test too, or to do these questionnaires or whatever they are, and to join the club. Because people have been so left out of things who have had experiences.
So, Mary, are you actively soliciting, for example, our listeners? You want people who've had anomalous experiences to go ahead, contact free, and take the test?
I'd encourage anyone, even if they're not absolutely certain whether it's relevant to them or not, because one of the things that I've discovered is a lot of people don't even know what the indicators are. They may have had a few things happen in their life and have never really worked them out. But one of the things that I do, if someone's seen a UFO or they've written to me because of something else that I've put out there, I always send them a questionnaire of my own. Although, that is for my CERN side. Because what I'm really asking them to do is to explore their own experience, not to prove anything to anyone, but to come to, if you like, to use that as a tool for themselves to maybe understand things they've never understood. But what's wonderful about the work that we've put into these particular questionnaires has been a lot of input from some very talented and experiences themselves and researchers. That really what we're trying to do is make them as open-ended as possible to just get a sense of just how broad and how vast this actually is. And as Dr. Klimo says, and I actually concur, I think this is far bigger than any of us perhaps have ever realized. And the only way we're going to find out is if we get people brave enough to put their, to put their own experiences into this kind of questionnaire. I mean, we're not asking for identities. It's the information that we're seeking, the patterns of experience that will help us to understand this from this broader perspective.
Before the end of the program, I'd like to have both of you tell me in sort of a succinct terms whether you think there's someone who knows, or at least knows more than we do. If there's somebody, government, think tank, in some capacity, who has looked at big picture stuff and has at least some kind of a handle on it. But there's so many people on the phones that I think we better take a couple of calls. But I promise you we'll get to that question sometime before the end of the program. I'm going to start with a wild card line, Gary in Ontario. Hi, Gary. You're on with John Klimo and Mary Rodwell. What's on your mind? Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've called in before, and I've tried to get a message across to you and George Norrie both, and I feel like I've been ignored. It's about two books that I've read that nobody seems to know anything about. One is called Bringers of the Dawn, Bringers, B-R-I-N-G-E-R-S, of the Dawn, D-A-W-N, by Barbara Marciniak.
Right.
And she's a channeler.
Yep.
And maybe John or Mary knows her.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's part of the channeling literature. I mean, yes. I spend a lot of my time in the whole channeling domain, and I see channeling is a way to get larger and transcending information into our box, into our local egos and consensus reality about larger reality and other beings from the other beings from the horse's mouth of them, and very often when they're the entities being channeled. I'd love to help connect the dots for people about the relationship of the channeling literature, the UFO literature, the parapsychological literature, the consciousness studies literature, the transpersonal spiritual literature. They are all deeply interknit. And it has to do with our species waking up, even in our lifetime. It's the pace is quickening, waking up to a larger truth that's not always been kept from us. We've kept it from ourselves. The timing has been off, but it's now out of control in a positive sense, I think. So, yes, I know the book you're talking about, and for people who know about ufology but don't know about channeling, or people who know about parapsychology but don't know about extraterrestriality, until these components come together and pool their information, they're operating with a hand tied behind their back separately, confronting the larger reality, the day-to-day reality, saying, well, you're both crazy. You know, it builds up that critical mass that, no, there's something that's bigger than your naysaying and your skepticism and your denying, and there's something even bigger than the true believer of only one of these anomalous domains. There's something that transcends that. And what's it all about? It's about that we are waking up. And in consciousness literature, what alters consciousness away from a stuck or a homeostatic sidewaysness to consciousness, you can't bootstrap yourself out of that consciousness until it's destabilized or deautomatized. You've got to get hit upside the head. You have to have an anomalous experience that you can't figure out that pulls you up short in your day-to-day habitual goings-on, and you say, what the f-? It gets your attention. Sometimes something has to be so non-ordinary that it wakes you up from the trance, the consensus trance, as my friend Charles Tart calls it, and you're shocked awake by a kind of hypnotic spell you've been under. And so you, the caller right now, you know, you're being called by some of the channel literature where there's truth in it, or there's something that's calling to you, and you feel a little bit of an awakening more, perhaps. And everybody on the phone right now, everybody listening right now, has versions of that story.
Gary, what's the second book that you had in mind?
Sorry.
Arcturians. We the Arcturians, yep. By Norma J. Milanovich,
right.
And Cynthia Plosky,
right.
And Betty Wright.
Yeah, We the Arcturians is one of my favorite books because it's full of what you call paraphysics or something. Where the Arcturians, through Milanovich, by the way, who was a doctorate holding academic, is she. They tell her about their technology with light and slowing it down, and the liquid light and amazing, amazing things. So if you know science or interdisciplinary about the scientific three-ring circus of all this stuff, and you read one of these channeling books like We the Arcturians, you see, my God, there's pieces of the puzzle here. There's other angles that's coming in, whether it's metaphorical or literal. It sheds light on and maybe takes further our scientific understanding. So We the Arcturians is one of my favorite books. Years ago, in the International UFO Congress, I presented that at a couple of times. One year, Bob Brown, who was running it, asked me to set up a whole day at the UFO Congress on channeling extraterrestrials. And I've been working on a book about that for about a decade now, but it'll come out, where I brought together Milanovich and I didn't bring together Marciniak, but a number of other people. I'm blanking out right now. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Middle of the mind, I can't retrieve them. So all day long, the people at the conference, many there for just the nuts and bolts part of ufology and so on, were hearing this other angle about the otherworldly and our cosmological subpersonalities outside of this Earth domain, it was like a wake up to them, and it fit in nicely and supplemented what they knew already or thought they knew. And
okay, Gary, thank you for that call. You finally got an answer about the two books that you've been wondering about for a while. Wildcard Line 2, Morris in Atwater, California. Hi, Morris.
Yeah, this is me. Hello.
Howdy.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I'd like to. I've had.
Hello. Morris just dropped. Sorry about that. We're going to try east of the Rockies, Aaron in Wisconsin. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, guys. What do you want to hear about, the near-death experience or the close encounter?
maybe near-death would be add variety to the...
Yeah, let's go with near-death.
Okay. I was thrown off the back of a speeding vehicle, and before I broke my neck or had the brain injury or the broken back, they pulled me out of my body. Took me to the other side where I was in a room. I call it the healing place. And I met my deceased son and my angel. And it looked like my angel was fixing me, like my neck injury, my spinal cord injury, so that I could walk. And then my son showed me the accident, and I could watch the accident as many times as I wanted to. And I could see my body being ragdolled over and over. And then he said, "You're going back." And I was kind of disappointed about that. I didn't want to go back. And he said, "We're going to give you some gifts to take with you, but you have to wait 30 years for them." And last month, or actually May of 2015, was the end of the 30-year waiting period. And one of the gifts was laying out of hands healing, and the other one was to become a famous musician. And I'm not a famous musician yet, but I was also told that I'm going to start healing foundations someday. So that's the gist of the NDE.
Well, Aaron, you should probably call these free folks and take the test and hook up with them.
I will.
Well, one of the projects we're interested in also within free is the relationships, the compare and contrast of ufology, extraterrestriology on the one hand, and eyewitness personal experiences from that domain on the one hand, and some of these other non-ordinary domains of experience and belief and claims. Like near-death experience, because what's the commonalities? Well, what's the deep structure that subsumes both what a lot of these coast-to-coast shows are about with ETs, we'll say, and then on the other hand, NDEs. NDEs have to do with transcending normal reality, normal materially-based reality and our normal beliefs about them. And so does being confronted by someone not of this earth, and they destabilize our stucknesses and make us go to the next level and reach an altered state of consciousness to which we may never return. We don't want to return. We're left changed, like Mary was saying earlier. These experiences leave people changed, profoundly changed, and not, you know, they don't go nuts. They get better being themselves and being more curious. And I think that's happening with you. And when you said, caller, that you're hearing about becoming a musician or a songwriter, whatever it may be. Well, one of the people I got involved with was a guy who was channeling John Lennon. And he was also a fairly well-known musician. And he was given a piece of the puzzle. And there's kind of, we've been given these gifts.
So, John, you had a guy who was working with you who was channeling John Lennon. Was he getting songs?
He was getting some, but he was the old band kind of guy. He was an older guy, and so it wasn't his music so much. But he was really wise about professionalism. He played trumpet in Miami Beach.
Stop because Fleetwood Mac is telling us we need to take a break. We'll come back and get to as many of your calls as we can. Stick around. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. An American original, Tom Petty, I Should Have Known It from the album Mojo, which is underrated but terrific. We're talking with John Klima and Mary Rodwell. The phones are full. We will get to as many of your calls and questions as we can right after this in our final segment of Coast to Coast AM. Mary Rodwell, I want to ask you the question I was intimating about a little bit ago. Do you think that there is someone somewhere who has studied this, either governments, your government, our government, think tank, private industry, someone who's tried to take on the same kinds of challenges that FREE is trying to do to try to get a handle on these larger mysteries, whether there's an interconnection or not?
I would think undoubtedly so. And that is what's so frustrating for all of us on the outside of that, is that, you know, a lot of these questions that we have, they've got data on because they, you know, they've picked up the craft. They've actually connected to the beings. And they also know what's actually going on in terms of the upgrades that are happening on this planet with a lot of the experiences and their children that are different. And they know they have these incredible abilities and have scores for them. And, you know, when you've got a 9-year-old that tells you that he knows this is going on, that there are bases underground and under the ocean, and he's 9 years old, and he said that, you know, what is his problem is that schooling on the surface with the average school cannot help him in the way that those that have these schools underground with these children, where they're aware of their abilities, their telepathic and telekinetic abilities, and all these other what we would call advanced abilities. He said, unfortunately, in the average school, they will never understand that. And he is aware of that at 9 years old. And the interesting thing is with the children is that they actually have conscious recall, not only of who they are and why they've come to this planet, but where they're from. And the abilities that they have as well. As this 9-year-old told me, that his abilities are like Tesla's, that he was a light physicist from where he came from, and that it's very primitive down here. And the only one that seems to have got anywhere with the physics that he understands was Tesla. So the children are actually bringing in this information, and they understand it. But I also know that the covert governments, without doubt, know this and know so much more, and this is what's so frustrating for researchers like ourselves.
And John, I'll tell you this, I have from multiple sources that I'm not going to tell you who they are, but people in who know this kind of thing say that it's beyond just studying UFOs. We know they've got piles of information on UFOs and sightings and radar information, things of that sort. But also that there have been attempts or proposals to study the interconnectedness of a variety of a range of different kind of paranormal activity, and that the people tasked with this have quashed it because of religious beliefs, that they suspect that it's demons or something like that. They don't want to open that door. I mean, same question to you. Do you suspect that there is somebody like in the American government who has a handle on it, or at least a better handle than the public?
If we did a kind of a survey like we've done with FREE so far with these experiencers, if we did it with your own listeners, which is a very large N base of people, you'd get up the yin-yang conspiracy theories and rumors and everything else about such secret governments, such covert operations and black budget this and that, and some of them, you know, if you really raise it up more, some of them are human, some of them are not human. There's all kinds of control freaks out there to keep a lid on things or to keep us cattle, like you say. And yet there are more, and the ones that are going to win, the good guys are going to win, are the ones that want to help midwife us into our full spiritual realized selves, as sons and daughters of a common creator that includes the reptilians as well as the Africans or whatever, you know? And so, to answer your question, that takes a number of shows, and you've had people on in the past that would have already answered that question from their own perspective. Yes, there's a lot of people holding pieces of this puzzle, and you could almost divide them into two categories. Those that want to let it out, to let the good news out to fellow human beings, using large media like Coast to Coast and so on the one hand, and then there's others that want to keep a lid on it, keep it secreted. There's power in that. Plus, yeah, whether they think it's demons or the public can't handle it, and you know, they're like children, and they'll just panic in the streets and all that if they knew the larger reality. That's what keeps everything sideways the way it is. And, you know, I'd rather gamble on fellow human beings, whatever their damn IQ is or their prejudices are. I go with them right now than I would with
power freaks.
Vote the right way if you gave them a chance, if they were informed.
All right, let's take a couple calls. First-time caller, Jerry in Los Angeles. A good show to call in on, Jerry. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I've been involved in this for over 60 years. I'm pushing 80, or 81, I should say. Anyway, I have very good contacts above. I love them. They love me. They show me respect. I show them respect. I will tell you one incident that happened in Griffith Park, August 2002. And I was thinking the night before I went to sleep about Nisara and a few things going on in this world. And anyway, I went to the park early in the morning. We opened at 5 in the morning. I drove up Vermont, and the very first turn to the left, the very first street to the left, I went up the hill to a circle, which you go around the circle and back down the hill again. And I was leaning up against a car facing the east. And there was a lot of traffic down below. For some reason, a lot of traffic in the park that time of the morning. And I was facing the east. Then all of a sudden, I have full awareness, completely aware of everything. The traffic stopped. A shuttle east of me in the air decloaked, and for a split second, I saw part of it. A beam of light came from them. There's no fear whatsoever. In fact, I was calmer then than I am now. And telepathically, they gave me the answers to some of the things that I wanted to know. And they were there for minutes, not seconds, for minutes. Then when the traffic started coming in again, they cloaked and disappeared. It took several years before I really knew who they were. They were very friendly, obviously. And with Nathan, a Nordic, I bilocate. With Nathan, a Nordic, on the New Jerusalem, in conversation with he and Zip. Oh, and by the way, in our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, 40% of our human type species, and 60% are not. And anyway, Zip is not human, but nevertheless, beautiful people. And I was told that day that shuttlecraft in Griffith Park was actually a Syrian craft stationed in Agartha. And they were kind enough to actually give me answers to my questions that I had on my mind then. And the contacts I have had, again, go on and on and on.
All right, Jerry, I'm going to get some reaction to what you've shared with us so far. Mary, any kind of initial reaction to what this Jerry just told us?
I'm very happy that he shared that, and it's wonderful that he does. And this is conscious contact. This is exactly what's going on to, I believe, not just thousands, but probably millions of people that never even mention it to anybody because they don't want to be seen as mentally unstable. Conscious contact is happening, and it's happening, you know, so regularly and frequently. As soon as people lose their fear, then, you know, this information comes in, and it comes in through channeling. It comes in through having a knowing or a sensing. And what's fascinating to me is that that's now leading on into the children who have conscious contact as well, that see spirits and see these beings. And they are getting the information exactly what is happening on this planet and how and their part in it, which to me is what you were asking before, is, you know, what is the sense of what's going on in this planet? And that's what Dr. Klimo is talking about. We are being given a boot up the bum, basically evolutionary-wise, so that we can actually become part of the galactic community. And that means we've got to at first, you know, recognize that they're here and that we're not alone.
Boot up the bum has now become our new slogan on Coast to Coast, so thank you for that. West of the Rockies, Nikki in Seattle. Hi, Nikki. Welcome to the show.
Hi. First of all, I would like to identify myself as not human, but other. I am other.
Okay. What do you mean, other? What do you mean by that?
Other, this is what I am. I am other. I'm not anything that you know. I'm other. That's what I am.
Okay. Can you whittle it down a little bit? Like, meaning you're from somewhere else?
Not
or
human, not from somewhere else, not from heaven or hell. I'm other.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the gist of what I wanted to tell you was a small story about when I was at my friend's house, and the door opened, and about 7 transparent aliens were in the doorway. They wouldn't step into the room, but they were in the doorway, and I was with my friend. I started saying, oh, my God, you know, I started freaking out because they're wearing army fatigues. They're transparent. The main one in the front had the head of a pig. They had huge alien weapons, and they all fit in the doorway somehow, you know. Anyway, so my friend tells them to get out and leave her alone. They were there to take me. And they said, this is your one and only favor that you get. Now, I didn't understand this at the time, but they left. And my friend told me that I have to leave and never come back to that place, because the next time they came back for me, he wouldn't be able to stop them. Now, my friend, I thought about it later, he was born in Roswell on the Army base in New Mexico. And so I figure he had something to do with that. Now, I have seen shadow people. Okay, I have seen them animated on the wall as shadows, fighting with each other. They were silent. They were tiny. I can talk to animals. I can make the trees stop moving. I can look
at
the sun.
All right. Hey, Nikki, I'm going to stop you for a second because you've given us so much to chew on here so far. I want to give enough time to our guests to respond. You have to be ready to sort of like be a blank slate and listen to what people say without judging them along the way. That you can't just automatically assume, hey, that sounds ridiculous, I'm not going to listen to it.
Correct. The instrument we've been referring to, which we sort of haven't been talking about, the first two phases of it are forced choice questions, they're called. You have to say yes or no. And so you can add them up. You can you know, tally the data and make generalizations with these 600 questions. We've drawn from many other prior studies as well, like the wonderful Leo Sprinkle, kind of legendary in these circles, who made one of the first surveys of this kind. He's in there. He's on our board, too. So we ask those kind of questions, including of the woman who's on the phone right now, and she would take our phase one and phase two things, and we could add her into the pool of things. But the phase three we're now working on is what's called qualitative research, not just yes, no. We ache to go deeper into people's experiences, and we ache to have them have an opportunity to share more of their experience in a more unbridled way, not just the forced choice yes, no. And that's what's called qualitative research. And that's really built upon the notion of something I haven't been involved with for 40 years in higher education research, which is what's called phenomenological research, where all we're interested in is somebody's experience. What is your experience in as much detail, as much time as it takes? The tape recorder is running. What is your experience of? And here's the woman on the phone right now giving us a little snippet of that experience. And if she went to the first two phases, the quantitative phases, and got to the third phase, she wanted to volunteer to do that, we would draw her out more and more about the 7 people in the doorway and the other talking to this and that, and we would get we just deepen the database. It's a rich. It's called a thick description of people's non-ordinary experiences, and that's so much needed in an organized, managed way to increase our understanding as a species about those of us within the species who are having these kinds of experiences, and the rest of us in the human family can be brought forth if it sounds familiar enough to us, or we can just learn what we can from it. And that's what we're trying to do with our study. So everybody who's come on the phone tonight in this portion is like a potential partaker of our instrument, in quotes. And the almost 1,500 we've got already sound so much like the people on the phone and the people who are not on the phone, who could be on the phone, of the millions that listen to Coast to Coast.
We've got links to free, and if people want to connect with you guys, you folks, and take the test at some point, we have the links on the Coast to Coast website, and I'm sure a lot of them are already availing themselves of that. Tried to get one more call in. Let's go east of the Rockies. Mike, not there. Let's try Ricardo in Marin County on the wild card line. Ricardo, are you there?
Oh, yes. Hello, and great good evening to you, George. And John and Mary, you are exactly correct on everything you've said, directly in regard to consciousness and what happens to people to gather the light of reason and promote right thought and correct action through the beings that are helping here. This is a godlike entity, and I've had multiple near-death experiences throughout my life. I've had six of them, two as a child, four as an adult, and in concert with that, I had two situations in 1992 and 2010. They were both UFO experiences, and they had to do with, one of them was driving out through Marin County, through the Badlands behind Petaluma toward a beach at a place called Marshall, where they used to have a place there that was called Synanon. There was a lot of UFO activity there. I drove out there one night, woke up at 11:30 at night. I got in my car. I was told to go there, and I didn't make it. I had 5.5 hours of missing time, and I didn't know where I ended up. When I drove out there, I saw a huge light come over several ridges, and then I couldn't remember anything, and I ended up somewhere at 6 a.m. practically, from midnight to 6 a.m. on another area of a freeway, 20 miles further out down the road. That was one of them. In 2010, I watched a craft fly over, coming down from the sky as a satellite. There was three of them, three satellites. One of them came down over the Golden Gate Bridge. A couple from Venezuela I eventually met later who saw the same craft. At 5 in the morning, after seeing that craft, it came directly over my area of the Richmond District in San Francisco. I had two objects that came up a fire well. And we're on a third story. There were giant raccoons that were about 4.5 to 5 feet tall. That was rather bizarre. And at that point, I got a neighbor to look out, and she was rather frightened. She was a young woman who, her name was Laura, and she was outside, and I knocked on her window. I said, "You got to see this." And I just saw a UFO over the Golden Gate Bridge.
Hey, Ricardo, I got to warn you that we got about a minute left in the program.
Yeah, I'll make it fast. These things happened to me then, and then after that, at 5:50 in the morning, I had a terrible nosebleed for the first time in my life out my right nostril all over my pillow.
I'll tell you what, you need to contact Free and share some of your other experiences with them. That's a pretty power-packed little adventure you had there. John and Murray, want to make any kind of quick, the music tells us we're out of time. I want to thank you both for being on. I hope a lot of our listeners respond and take your test.
Thank you, George.
Thank you so much, George. It's been a
pleasure. We'll have you back when you get some more results. Thanks also to my earlier guests, Diane Corcoran and Ray Hernandez, and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast who've helped us put this program on. I'll be back tomorrow night as well with a look at the power of Big Pharma. So tune in if you get a chance. Good night.